Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
If anyone needs help in the United States today, it's the people of New Palestine, Ohio, where a train wreck has released toxic chemicals, and then they burn them, turn them into a form of gas not seen since World War I. Tucker has nailed this one right out of the park. The incompetence of the Biden administration, even in the face of a relatively straightforward catastrophe, is mind-boggling. Check it out.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. East Palestine, Ohio is not a huge place. It's a town of about 5,000 people, not far from Pittsburgh. For many years, East Palestine was known as the place that produced dishes and cups and pitchers for America's hotels. The enormous ceramics works there employed much of the town. That's all gone now, and predictably, East Palestine is a lot poorer for it. The median household income in the town is now less than $45,000. East Palestine is overwhelmingly white, and it's politically conservative. More than 70% of the voters in the surrounding county supported Donald Trump in the last election. It shouldn't be relevant, but as you're about to hear, it very much is. 11 days ago, a 150-car train derailed in East Palestine, and when it did, it spewed poisonous chemicals onto the ground and into the surface waters. After the crash, the Ohio State EPA found evidence of butyl acrylate in the Ohio River, as well as in the creeks and streams that feed it. Now, this was a concern for more than simply East Palestine, given that the Ohio River supplies drinking water to about a tenth of the entire U.S. population. So this train derailment was an environmental disaster, not an environmental disaster like climate change is, but an actual environmental disaster, a disaster that's hurting actual people. And then it got worse. Several days after the derailment, officials decided it was a good idea to set fire to the spilled chemicals. And the result of that decision was a giant toxic mushroom cloud over the entire region. You're seeing a picture of it on your screen right now. So given the evident crisis in East Palestine, how did the federal government, did the Biden administration respond? Well, under Pete Buttigieg, the Department of Transportation, which responds to train derailments, took decisive action. Pete Buttigieg announced something called Transit Equity Day. That's yet another day that we celebrate race-based federal funding that, despite the train derailment, does not apply to East Palestine because the people who live there are the wrong color. So instead, Buttigieg's DOT announced an $80 million project to improve the roads in Philadelphia and $24 million for the roads in Detroit, both of which vote Democrat. And then Mayor Pete talked about perhaps the most pressing problem in this country, which is that we have too many white construction workers. Mayor Pete said not a single word about East Palestine, Ohio. And that's not because everything was under control there. As the DOT was busy tweeting about Black History Month and transit equity, the governor of Ohio announced that controlled burn of chemicals from the derailment could potentially kill thousands. And that shouldn't surprise you because vinyl chloride, when burned, turns into phosgene. That was the single most deadly poison gas used during World War I. And vinyl chloride was one of the chemicals on that derailed train in East Palestine. Here's the governor of Ohio.
Norfolk Southern Railroad is planning a controlled release of the vinyl chloride at approximately 3:30 p.m. The controlled release of the toxic chemicals also has the potential to be deadly if inhaled. Those in the red area are facing grave danger of death if they are still in that area. Those living in the orange area are at risk of severe injury, including skin burns and serious lung damage. To state the obvious, all of you need to leave as well, and I need to leave as well, too. So,
notice the tone and the chuckle at the end. That's Governor Mike DeWine of Ohio, a great defender of Ukraine. And he's just announced that, well, thousands of people in his state could die. But he doesn't seem panicked by it. It's not a hair on fire emergency. It's not like Kyiv is in peril. So after that controlled burn of the deadly chemicals, officials told residents within East Palestine that if you live within a 2-mile radius of the derailment, you had to shelter in place and keep your windows closed. Residents closer to the mushroom cloud were put up in a hotel. Within days, they were all let back into their home without the Department of Transportation in Washington saying a word. As one hazardous materials specialist put it, the whole town may be unsafe as a result of this. Watch.
The railroad company is responsible for this, and before these people went back to their homes, their homes should have been tested. Their homes should have been cleaned. From the onset, these people were being marginalized in an effort to mitigate this. And you know, at first they were being told, you know, go get a hotel and keep your receipts and we'll reimburse this. East Palestine is a very poor community. Some of these people don't have the money to go get the hotels and do all of the and, you know, all this stuff. This really looks like a nuclear winter. And I said, well, you know, pretty much, yeah. We nuked this town with chemicals, and this is what they're getting.
Now, imagine if this had happened in, well, the favored cities of Philadelphia and Detroit. Lots of poor people in those cities. Everyone feels for them. Everyone wants them to be safe. Imagine at the same time this has happened in Washington, D.C., in, say, Georgetown. Well, the National Guard would be called in. There'd be no mushroom cloud of toxic chemicals on the horizon. We can promise you that. And, of course, in both cases, if this affected the rich or the favored poor, it would be the lead of every news channel in the world. But it happened to the poor, benighted town of East Palestine, Ohio, whose people are forgotten and, in the view of the people who lead this country, forgettable. So no big deal. The hazmat specialist in that video, Sil Cagliano, explained to local media that it's not just vinyl chloride on the train. That's not the only threat. There's also ethylene gas. And we're quoting, you're looking at 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the line until you see potential long-term effects. This stuff seeks low-lying areas. It could be in sewers. It could be in nooks, crannies, and crevices. Of course. That's how poison gas works. Ask anyone in Verdun. And that would explain the effect that the chemical weapons expert just outlined, would explain why fish and animals are dying in the area without explanation. Though, of course, the explanation is very obvious. One resident in East Palestine says his foxes are sick now. Watch this.
Taylor is an ODNR registered fox keeper. A couple of his foxes broke their legs trying to run after the initial derailment. One of his foxes even died.
Out of nowhere, he just started coughing really hard and just shut down. And he had liquid diarrhea and just went very fast.
Taylor tells me all of his foxes have been sick and acting different since the weekend. Some have abnormally puffy faces, including the one he's holding. He says they are not eating properly. Many are dealing with stomach issues and are acting lethargic.
This isn't how a fox should act. He's very weak, limp. His eyes are very, like, watery and weepy.
Some of the foxes are pacing rapidly in their pen, another sign they are not well.
Yeah. Pay attention to the animals, always. There's a reason the phrase canary in the coal mine is a cliche. So after all of this becomes public, that the water and the air in and around East Palestine, maybe in the region, could be contaminated, finally, Pete Buttigieg, the Department of Transportation, decided to weigh in, quote, "Our federal partners at EPA are on site and monitoring indoor and outdoor air quality." Ooh, air quality. What about water? Oh, water. What does that have to do with the climate change? Well, it's the one thing you can't do without. After about 2.5 days, you die. But they're not even checking the water. They're only checking the air a week after people were let back into their homes. And according to Mayor Pete, the EPA hasn't even screened 200 homes in close proximity to the burn that wasn't organic or accidental. It was authorities burning it. So they just don't care, actually. Could that be clearer? Well, residents in East Palestine were inhaling toxic fumes. Mayor Pete was joking about the Chinese spy balloon his boss allowed to fly across the country. He's a funny guy. Watch this.
I mean, if you look at what the American transportation systems have faced in the last 2 or 3 years. Now we got balloons.
That's right.
So you're completely incompetent, completely incompetent. There's never been a cabinet secretary this flamboyantly incompetent and this so obviously uncaring, almost to the point of evil, if we're being honest about it. And then a little joke at the end, that was Mayor Pete yesterday, nearly 2 weeks after the disaster in Ohio. Now, was this disaster predictable? Well, we're not sure. Netflix made a movie about it last year. A train derails in Ohio and spills toxic chemicals everywhere. Some of the locals in East Palestine were actually extras in that film. But no one saw it coming. It never could have happened.
Right.
Well, it is coming out now. And again, we're not exactly sure why this train derailed, but according to a report in Jalopnik, the train involved in the derailment, Norfolk Southern, lobbied federal regulators for about a decade so they wouldn't have to improve their emergency brakes. The Biden administration, like the previous two administrations, didn't push the issue, and apparently the emergency brakes on this particular train failed during this incident. Now, again, there's a lot of propaganda here. There's unions involved. There are a lot of people who benefit from assigning blame to this disaster. So we're not going to endorse any theory about why it happened. We're only going to note that Mayor Pete, who's in charge of finding out why it happened, doesn't seem interested at all. And like everybody else in New York, Washington, and L.A., he's just kind of pretending it didn't happen and telling these little jokes. We are interested in why it happened and in its effects. Subscribe to the Fox News YouTube channel to catch our nightly...
Well, it seems to me Tucker got it exactly right. The Biden administration is staffing up with people on the basis of their sex, their color, their sexual preference. Buttigieg has no qualifications whatsoever. Secretary of Transportation, look how he's mangling. He's not even making the least effort to deal with this catastrophe. I'm delighted to be joined today by Danny Siras, who has a vast background in law enforcement, frequently here on the show. And while I brought him in to talk about another what appears to be fake shooting, and they're going to be taking place, I think, about the rate of one a day from here on out until they take our guns. But every time they have another fake shooting, people go out and buy more guns, so they don't seem to understand that they're engaged in self-defeating behavior. Danny, I'd like your thoughts about Pete Buttigieg and what happened in East Palestine. I'm just stunned.
Yeah, hello, sir. Good to be with you. Well, I think, as usual, Pete is showing us that he's quite incompetent. He just never seems to take care of anything. He always seems to follow the, what I would call a deep state narrative. And he's completely botching this. And the way that they set these chemicals on fire is just unbelievable. I mean, even if they were going to do that, what was the hurry to start the fire? They could have, you know, evacuated people, you know, and not taken a chance. The way they poisoned the environment, killed the animals and the fish. I mean, and they should have known this. This is obviously a group of people doing this that have no concern whatsoever for the health and the welfare of the people in that location. And people should be completely outraged at the way they handled this event, sir.
No, I couldn't agree more, Danny. I could not agree more. Now, we've been reporting about how what happened with the Nord Stream 2. And Mike Whitney has published on Hoon's Review, UNZ.com, what Hirsch got wrong. So I want to share that with you. And then Danny and I are going to tune to some of these shooting incidents. Mike Whitney, there's something not quite right about Cy Hirsch's report on the destruction of Nord Stream 2. There are a number of inconsistencies in the piece that lead me to believe that Hirsch was less interested in presenting the unvarnished truth than relaying a version of events that advance a particular agenda. That is not to say I don't appreciate what the author has done. I do, in fact. I think it would be impossible to overstate the significance of a report that positively identifies the perpetrators of what appears to be the biggest act of industrial terrorism in history. Hirsch's article has a potential to greatly undermine the credibility of the people in power and by doing so, bring the war to a swift end. It is an incredible achievement that we should all applaud. Here's a brief recap by political analyst Andre Desmarais. On Wednesday, journalist Seymour Hirsch revealed that the United States Navy, at the direction of President Joe Biden, was responsible for the September 26, 2022 attacks on the Nord Stream pipelines carrying natural gas between Russia and Germany. This article, which had been met with total silence in the major U.S. publications, has blown apart the entire narrative of U.S. involvement in the war as a response to unprovoked Russian aggression. It lifts a lid on far-reaching plans to use the escalating conflict with Russia to solidify U.S. economic and military domination over Europe. Hirsch revealed that the operation was ordered by U.S. President Joe Biden, planned by Secretary of State Antony Blinken, Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs Victoria Nuland, and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. This short excerpt summarizes a primary claim that is the focal point of the entire article, and in my opinion, the claim is well-researched, impartially presented, and extremely persuasive. But there are parts of the article that are not nearly as convincing and will undoubtedly have a lot of fairly well-informed readers scratching their heads. For example, here's Hirsch discussing the timeline for the Nord Stream operation. Biden's decision to sabotage a pipeline came after more than 9 months of highly secret back-and-forth debate inside Washington's national security community about how to best achieve that goal. For much of that time, the issue is not whether to do the mission, but how to get it done with no overt clue as to who was responsible. 9 months? The war broke out on February 24th. The pipeline was blown up on September 26th. That's 7 months. So if there were more than 9 months of highly secret back-and-forth debate inside Washington's national security community about how to sabotage the pipelines, then we must assume the scheming preceded the war. This is a crucial point. Yet Hirsch skims over it like it's no big deal. But it is a big deal because, as Andre Desmarais points out, it blows apart the entire narrative of U.S. involvement in the war as a response to unprovoked Russian aggression. In other words, it proves that the United States was planning to engage in acts of war against Russia, regardless of developments in Ukraine. It also suggests that the Russian invasion was merely a cover for Washington to execute a plan that it had mapped out years earlier. Later in the article, Hirsch makes the same claim again without emphasizing its underlying significance. He says the Biden admin was doing everything possible to avoid leaks as the planning took place late in 2021 and into the first months of 2022. The truth, as journalist John Helmer states in a recent article, is far different than Hirsch describes. Here is Helmer explaining from the full text of the Hirsch report. It appears that neither the source nor Hirsch has direct knowledge of the history of U.S.-led operation to sabotage and destroy the pipelines, which became public more than a year before. They directly involved the Polish government and the Danish government. In fact, by error of omission, Hirsch and his men are ignorant of these operations and of that history. What's wrong with the Hirsch report on the Nord Stream attack? John Helmer dances with the bears. U.S. opposition to Nord Stream is not a recent development. It has a long history dating back to the very beginning of the project in 2011. Even back then, an article appeared in the German magazine Spiegel claiming the project is aimed at ensuring the long-term security of Europe's energy supplies, but it remains controversial. Controversial? Why was Nord Stream considered controversial? What is controversial about sovereign nations strengthening economic ties with other countries in order to ensure they have enough cheap energy to fuel their factories and heat their homes? This question really cuts to the heart of the matter, and yet Hirsch eschews it altogether. Why? Here's more from Hirsch. President Biden and his foreign policy team, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, Secretary of State Tony Blinken, and Victoria Nuland, the Undersecretary of State for Policy, had been vocal and consistent in their hostility to the two pipelines. From its earliest days, Nord Stream 1 was seen by Washington and its anti-Russian NATO partners as a threat to Western dominance. America's political fears were real. Putin would now have an additional and much-needed major source of income, and Germany and the rest of Western Europe would become addicted to low-cost natural gas supplied by Russia while diminishing European reliance on America. America's political fears were real. Why is Hirsch defending the imperial mindset that economic transaction between foreign nations must somehow benefit the United States or be regarded as a national security threat? That is not the role of an impartial journalist gathering information for his readers. That is the role of a propagandist. Yes, it is true Putin would have an additional and much-needed major source of income because that is how free markets work. You sell your gas and you get paid. End of story. There's nothing criminal or sinister about it, and it does not provide justification for acts of terrorism. Following this shocking statement, Hirsch continues with his other concern. Germany and the rest of Western Europe would become addicted to low-cost natural gas supplied by Russia. Why does Hirsch invoke the tedious addiction meme that is repeated ad nauseum by the political activists in the mainstream media? And what does it actually mean? The fact is, Germany was getting cheap gas from Russia, which increased its competitiveness, profitability, and economic prosperity. How is that a bad thing? How can access to cheap fuel be characterized as an addiction? If you were able to fill up your gas tank for $1 a gallon, would you refuse on the basis that you might become addicted? Of course not. You'd be grateful you could buy it that cheap. So why is Hirsch pushing this nonsense? And why does he double down shortly after when he said Nord Stream 1 was dangerous enough in the view of NATO and Washington, but Nord Stream 2 would double the amount of cheap gas that would be available to Germany and Western Europe? By the way, there's a map here showing all these nations that would be affected by Nord Stream and observing none of them are America. Whores. Imagine the free market actually working as it was designed to work, lifting people from poverty and spreading prosperity across national borders. Can you see how narrowly imperialistic this is? Germany needs Russia's cheap gas. It's good for its industry, good for working people, good for economic growth, and it is good for Russia, too. The only one it's not good for is the United States, whose power is undermined by the German-Russian partnership. Can you see that? And by the way, There has never been an incident in which Putin has used Russian gas or oil for the purpose of blackmail, coercion, or extortion. Never. That is a myth concocted by Washington spinmeisters who want to throw a wrench in German-Russo relations. But there's not a word of truth in any of it. Here's more from Hirsch. Opposition in Nord Stream 2 flared on the eve of the Biden inauguration in January 2021, when Senate Republicans repeatedly raised a political threat of cheap Russian gas during the confirmation of hearing of Blinken as Secretary of State. Would Biden stand up to the Germans? Blinken said yes. I know his strong conviction that this is a bad idea, the Nord Stream 2, he said. I know he would have us use every persuasive tool we have to convince our friends and partners, including Germany, not to move forward with it. A few months later, as the construction of the second pipeline near completion, Biden blinked. That May, in a stunning turnaround, the administration waived sanctions against Nord Stream AG, with a State Department official conceding trying to stop the pipeline through sanctions and diplomacy has always been a long shot. Behind the scene, administrative official repeatedly urged Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, by then facing the threat of a Russian invasion, not to criticize the move. There were immediate consequences. Senate Republicans led by Ted Cruz announced an immediate blockade of all of Biden's foreign policy nominees and delayed passage of the annual defense bill for months, deep into the fall. Politico later depicted Biden's turnabout on the second Russian pipeline as the one decision, arguably more than the chaotic military withdrawal from Afghanistan, that has imperiled Biden's agenda. This is, we'll be right back.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Mike Whitney was just explaining how Senate Republicans led by Ted Cruz put pressure on the Biden admin to take action against Nord Stream. Mike Whitney continues, "This is interesting. We already know that Biden and his lieutenants were resolutely committed to terminating Nord Stream regardless of the risk. So why did Biden decide to do an about-face and lift sanctions even while his team was putting the final touches on a plan to blow up the pipeline? Why?" No, as Hirsch points out, the decision to blow up the pipeline had already been made, which means the administration was merely looking for a way to hide their tracks. In other words, they were already working on a legal defense of plausible deniability, which was reinforced by the lifting of sanctions. That was a real objective, to create as much distance between themselves and the terrorist act they'd already approved and were about to launch. Here's more from Hirsch. The administration was floundering, despite getting a reprieve on crisis in mid-November, when Germany's energy regulators suspended approval of the second pipeline. Natural gas prices surged 8% within days amid growing fears in Germany and Europe that the pipeline suspension and the growing possibility of a war between Russia and Ukraine would lead to a very much unwanted cold winter. It was not clear to Washington just where Olaf Scholz, Germany's newly appointed chancellor, stood. Months earlier, after the fall of Afghanistan, Scholz had publicly endorsed French President Emmanuel Macron's call for a more autonomous European foreign policy in a speech in Prague, clearly suggesting less reliance on Washington and its mercurial actions. This is pure fiction, of course. Scholz paid lip service to a more autonomous European foreign policy. What would you expect him to say to a domestic audience? And does Hirsch honestly believe that Scholz has not been in Washington's back pocket from the very beginning? Does he think that Scholz based his decision on Putin's invasion and not on agreements he'd made with Washington before the war had even begun? Keep in mind, the United States have been arming, training, and providing logistic support for Ukrainian forces in the East for the last 8 years, the purpose of which was to prepare for a war with Russia. Does anyone deny that? No. No one denies that. Was Scholz aware of it? Of course he was aware of it. Every leader in Europe knew what was going on. There were even articles in the mainstream explaining in minute detail what the U.S. was up to. It was not a secret. And this is just one inconsistency. After all, didn't former Chancellor Angela Merkel openly admit in an interview with a German magazine that Germany deliberately shrugged off its obligations under the Minsk Treaty in order to buy time so the Ukrainian army could get stronger so it would be better prepared to fight the Russian invasion? Yes, she did. So we can be 100% certain that Scholz knew what the overall game plan was: to lure Russia into a war in Ukraine and then claim unprovoked aggression. Scholz knew it. Hollande knew it. Zelensky knew it. Boris Johnson knew it. Petro Poroshenko knew it, and Biden knew it. They all knew it. Even so, Hirsch wants us to believe that Scholz knew nothing about these elaborate and costly plans, but simply made his decisions as developments took place in real time. That is not true. That is not what happened, and I would argue that Hirsch knows that is not what happened. But the biggest failing of the Hirsch piece is a complete omission of the geopolitical context in which this act of terrorism took place. The U.S. doesn't go around the world blowing up critical energy infrastructure for nothing. No. The reason Washington embarked on this risky gambit was because it is facing an existential crisis that can only be resolved by crushing those emerging centers of power that threaten America's dominant position in the global order. And that's what's going on beneath the surface. The U.S. is attempting to roll back the clock to the glorious 1990s after the Soviet empire collapsed and the world was Washington's oyster. But those days are gone forever. U.S. power is irreversibly eroding to its basic lack of competitiveness. If the U.S. were still the industrial powerhouse it was following World War II, when the rest of the world was in ruins, then there would be no need to blow up pipelines to prevent European-Russian economic integration and the emergence of a massive free trade zone spanning the area from Lisbon to Vladivostok. But the fact is, the U.S. is not as essential to global growth as it once was, and besides, other nations want to be free to pursue their own growth model. They want to implement the changes that best fit their own culture, their own religion, and their own traditions. They don't want to be told what to do. But Washington doesn't want change. Washington wants to preserve the system that bestows the greatest amount of power and wealth on itself. Hirsch does not simply ignore the geopolitical factors that led to the sabotage. He proactively creates a smokescreen with his misleading explanations. Check it out. As long as Europe remained dependent on the pipelines for cheap natural gas, Washington was afraid that countries like Germany would be reluctant to supply Ukraine with the money and weapons it needed to defeat Russia. It was at this unsettled moment that Biden authorized Jake Sullivan to bring together an interagency group to come up with a plan. More baloney. Washington doesn't care about Germany's pathetic contribution to the war effort. What Washington cares about is power, pure unalloyed power. And Washington's global power was being directly challenged by European-Russian economic integration and the creation of a giant economic commons beyond its control. And the Nord Stream pipeline was at the very heart of this new bustling phenomenon. It was a main artery connecting the raw material and labor of the East with the technology and industry of the West. It was a marriage of mutual interest that Washington had to destroy to maintain its grip on regional power. Think about it. This new economic commons, Greater Europe, with eventually ease trade and travel restrictions, allow the free flow of capital and labor between countries and harmonize regulations in a way that would build trust and strengthen diplomatic ties. Here's more from an earlier piece that sums it up. In a world where Germany and Russia are friends and trading partners, there is no need for U.S. military bases, no need for expensive U.S.-made weapons and missile systems, and no need for NATO. There's also no need to transact energy deals in U.S. dollars or stockpile U.S. treasuries to balance accounts. Transactions between business partners can be conducted in their own currencies, which is bound to precipitate a sharp decline in the value of the dollar and a dramatic shift in economic power. This is why the Biden administration opposes Nord Stream. It's not just a pipeline. It's a window into the future, a future in which Europe and Asia are drawn closer together into a massive free trade zone that increases their mutual power and prosperity, while leaving the U.S. on the outside looking in. It is the responsibility of a journalist to provide the context needed for the reader to understand the topic of discussion. Hirsch doesn't do that, which leads me to believe that John Helmer is right when he says, this is an indictment of the Biden pipeline plot, not of the U.S. war plan. I think he's got it exactly right that Seymour Hirsch was actually performing the role of a limited hangout, giving partial truths about a far bigger picture that is actually devastating to the Biden administration in the place of America and the world. And let me say that during the break, I had a phone call from a very reliable source that the thesis that the destruction in Turkey was caused by HARP has been gaining traction because, unlike normal earthquakes, there was no epicenter. There was this massive destruction, roughly along a linear line, indicative of the use of an instrument like HARP and negating the hypothesis this was a natural disaster. Danny, these are huge stories. I'd welcome your thoughts about either or both.
Well, you know, as a U.S. citizen, sir, I'm really disappointed in this Nord Stream pipeline situation. You know, it just seems like we shouldn't have a right to go in and destroy a pipeline just because we're happy about one side prospering versus the other. You know, that would be like us going after Japan because they're selling, you know, cheap and quality cars to one particular country, and we just don't want them to have them. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It's an act of war for us to go in there and do that. And, you know, every citizen should be very concerned at the current administration for going in there and creating an unprovoked act of war like that. I mean, this is an impeachable offense, but yet we don't really see Congress doing a whole lot about it, you know, trying to draw us into war and knocking out the pipeline. Russia has a right to sell whatever product it wants to any country it wants to sell it to. And the country, other countries have a right to buy whatever products that they want. And the fact that, you know, they came to a good arrangement between the two of them, the two countries, and they were both prospering on a deal, right? There was a mutual benefit from both parties. One, you know, prospering, making some money. One, the benefit of the low cost. I mean, can you imagine if we had a pipeline coming to the U.S. and Putin was selling us, you know, oil for $5 or $10 a barrel or something, we were all enjoying 50 cents or a dollar gasoline, and all of a sudden we had to go to $5 or $6 because they didn't like something about the way he was profiting. So now all of a sudden, you know, our gas is astronomical. I mean, we would be livid, you know, and just people would be completely outraged, and they should be outraged that the U.S. would reach in and do this. The other concern that I have about this whole thing by looking at all the intel briefs on this is the fact that they're looking for an out, our deep state, over this whole COVID-19. They're looking for distractions any way they can get it, and a war with Russia would be a nice distraction. It would cause, you know, massive amount of death around the globe. It would be, you know, just horrendous. And Congress is never going to declare war on Russia. They're not going to do it. So we have this proxy war taking place right now in Ukraine with all these other countries, you know, chipping in here and there to, you know, help try to help out this proxy war, which is failing miserably. Well, what's really bad about that is that, you know, if they were to hit this pipeline like they did, you know, the intel is saying that they leaked it on purpose, because what they're trying to do is trying to get Russia to do a retaliation on the United States for blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline, which I think Putin is smarter and understands this. And we haven't seen that yet. But it seems to me he would have the right. If that was our pipeline, okay, and not his, and we were pumping gas or whatever to another country, and somebody hit our pipeline, we would be pelted on the news 24 hours a day about what we should do. And, of course, we would send ships and submarines and all of our military equipment. And the country that did that would be severely dealt with in a big hurry. But yet we haven't seen that from Russia yet. And it seems to me that it's quite plausible that they're trying to draw themselves into a war by provoking a retaliation attack from Russia. And then if that were to happen, then that would put pressure on Congress to declare some kind of a war. And there you go. Here comes World War III, which would be an absolute disaster for the entire planet. It would be ugly. There'd be millions of deaths and, you know, billions and billions of dollars of destruction of property. It would just be an unwinnable war that would go on forever, and it would be horrible. And I can just commonly see that, because in their depopulation agenda, that's what they want to achieve. So many facets to this, and if you're a Democrat and you voted Democrat, you should be absolutely outraged that we stepped in and messed up this pipeline and blew it up. And we interfered with two countries that had an amicable deal to prosper for each other. And the fact that we went in there and did that unprovoked like that. And, you know, we don't have a right to decide who sells what to who. And, you know, it just, I hope everybody thinks about that. You know, any country, if they develop a product and they sell it to another country, you know, and then we get in there and destroy that product on both sides and say, you can't make it, you can't sell it and give it to this country. You know, that's just outrageous. What if any country did that to us? I mean, it's just, they're so over the top, sir. They're so, it's just such a globalist thing on what they're doing. They have no concern for anybody's rights. It's just, it's outrageous what they did, sir, on so many levels. I hope everybody understands that.
Danny, that was a wonderful commentary. I couldn't agree more. I think you nailed it. Exactly. And the idea of the what's going on here with regard to Turkey is disturbing, too. Meanwhile, we get more reports that stratospheric balloons are going to rain tiny electronic spies from the sky. Actually, I have another report suggesting the balloon was a U.S. Department of Defense operation. That's a reason they didn't shoot it down. And that the balloon was used to create laser tracking and markers across the continent for an EMP that we would use to take out our own electric grid. I mean, this is absolutely stunning. But when you understand the reports that are coming out now that the Department of Defense was involved in the VAX program, I just find the whole situation just profoundly upsetting. Just profoundly upsetting. Now, we have a situation here with regard to the, well, let me just mention the latest. There was an interview with Darren Hamlin, who it appears actually did survive, but is not willing to talk about why he nearly, you know, dropped dead. I mean, this is peculiar. Let me find it here.
Heart attack. It actually wasn't a heart attack. It was cardiac arrest. His heart stopped. It just stopped. Well, this clip right here, man, watching this, man, There's a lot of things I believe that DeMar Hamlin knows, but he just does not want to address it. I believe he should actually tell us this because it probably, just probably could give us some insight into what's actually happening with these other young athletes. I mean, on the videos we put up, the age range of these young athletes collapsing, and in some cases dying, roughly like 16 years old to 25. That's not normal, guys. This is just not normal. Let's listen to this.
To you, the question on so many minds, what caused his heart to stop beating?
You're 24, peak physical condition, and run circles around me right now. How did doctor describe what happened to you? That's a little stellar thing.
You heard it right there. Something I want to stay away from. Why is he refusing to actually address this? He seemed to be very, very uncomfortable. He thought for some seconds there. But it seems like right here, ABC actually does a jump cut to the next question.
I know from my experience, the NFL, they do more tests than anything. And in the course of you having your physical, did anybody ever come back with any, say you had a heart issue or anything that was abnormal?
Honestly, no. I've always been a healthy, young, fit, energetic, human being, let alone athlete. So it was something that was just, that we're still processing, and I'm still talking through with my doctors just to see.
Wow. That second part of his answer right there. He said they never came back to him in the past in his NFL career, said that he had any type of heart issue. But he collapsed on the field on Monday Night Football. 24 years old, great shape. He will actually tell us that there was no issues before this. The doctors never came up with anything. But he refuses to actually answer what actually caused him to collapse on Monday Night Football. I mean, his answer right there, man, that's going to lead people to speculate even more and question a whole bunch of other things as well.
There are a lot of comments about it. I'm so tired of watching people drop like flies all over the earth, and every one of our leaders are silent. Here's another. He isn't contributing to further incidents by not revealing the cause. One would think that if it had nothing to do with the facts, that he would state that. When we get to the bottom of this, we need to hold absolutely everyone accountable, to include people like him, for not getting the truth out. Another. It's what he's not saying that's extremely telling. Another. He was absolutely told not to say anything about what causes cardiac arrest. Well, we all know what's going on, and we're not stupid here. And I'm getting really tired of hearing about people dropping dead, especially young people, most specifically young athletes. More. Now I lost respect for the guy. He had an opportunity to speak up and probably save countless lives. But him refusing to answer only shows me that money and fame is more important than even human life, even the children's lives. I stand by what I said, and I know it was an adverse reaction to the jab. No one is brave enough to save lives, I see another. He's afraid of speaking up to not destroy his career and livelihood, in my opinion, but he didn't say it all without actually saying it. He's a smart dude. Another. Ask him if he'd be willing to disclose his and his family's finances since the incident. Doubtful. Another. I hope this young man remains healthy and can continue his career. I have no respect for him if he knows it's what we all think it is and refuses to come forward so that other lives might be saved. Another. It's okay, DeMar. We know what happened. Why the vax? I'm just glad you made it. Another. It was a jabbity jab jab, and we all know it. All of these doctors that won't acknowledge this should lose their medical license. Another. No doubt it was a jab. When they offer no explanation, it was a jab. Another. Those who remain silent in the midst of evil wrongdoings are the ones who are loudly promoting their actions. Another. It is even more obvious now to anyone who's being honest about what's happening. A shame they won't speak up and try and stop people from making this mistake with healthy kids. Another. He won't give the answer because he knows the answer, and I'm sure they paid him hush money to keep it to himself. The rest of us with an IQ above average know the answer. We don't need to hear it. His silence speaks volumes. Another, he said more by not saying anything than if he would have told the truth. My dad passed away after he got the jab, but not before suffering for several months. I miss our country. Another, the poison jab caused his heart stoppage and almost took his life, like with many other pro athletes. Another, you didn't tell me out of all the vicious hits during the 50s, 60s, and 70s that it took till now for this to happen is insane. There are probably thousands of hits in the exact same area of the chest that didn't come out this bad. Think of all the defensive phenoms over the years, players who didn't care if they took your head off or killed the other person. For a doctor to come, another, he doesn't have to tell us we know. DeMar is not speaking up about what caused it, tells me all I need to know. Another, it's as if DeMar doesn't care if the same happens to somebody else. What a caring, every man for himself kind of guy. Another, my interpretation of that is he signed a gag order. DNA most likely directly from the FNL if he ever wants to play again. Another, his silence is deafening. Another, the follow-up question should have been, since you aren't willing to say what the doctors told you, do you believe what they told you could or would save the lives of other players from this point on? If he still didn't answer, you have put more responsibility on him to share what he was told. Another, everyone not in denial knows. Another, he said a lot without saying a whole lot. Another, the only thing necessary for the tribe of evil is for good men to do nothing. Edmund Burke's quote definitely applies in this case. NFL probably promised him a chance to play in exchange for remaining silent, but the damage to his body was worse than a concussion. Danny, all this is just awful stuff. Your thoughts?
There's two topics that you hit on.
Danny, hold that thought, Danny, as soon as we return from this break.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Danny, your thoughts.
Well, on this DeMar Hamlin thing, sir, you know, I've been following this thing off and on. And there's been a, you know, and I know you've covered it ad nauseum, but there's been a set of strange anomalies that have happened with this that are just not explained. You know, from the time he collapsed on the field, he actually, we had an eyewitness come forward. He died twice. They tried to hit him with a defibrillator. Then he died again at the hospital. He was out for over 8 minutes, so he would have brain damage at that point. And we had doctors leaking from inside of the hospital that he was brain dead, which was really interesting. They were coming on Stu Peters' show and leaking it. And then when we finally see him, we see him at a football game, where he's wearing an outfit with his face obscured, wearing sunglasses, with a comedy show of people around him, covering him up, not letting the public see him, not being around anybody, being in a room by himself. You know, very, very bizarre behavior to cover up his face. Then we have a release of another video with him supposedly talking to us, but it looked to appear like it was on green screen, where the background was kind of faded and fuzzy. And then they also made a major mistake where they show him 1 minute with a tattoo, but then when he's on his arm in the hospital, and that's the tattoo that he currently has on his arm, but then we see in the video he doesn't have the tattoo. So they obviously forgot to CGI in the tattoo at that point. So we know something weird's going on, but irregardless of whether he's alive or he's not alive, whatever you want to say, he collapsed on the football field because of the COVID-19 vaccine. He took the jab. He was also boosted. At one point, his doctor posted on Twitter before he was kicked off of Twitter that he had the jab and he was boosted. And my theory on this, sir, why the NFL is working so hard for this one particular person, more so than anybody else, is because the more that time goes on, I talk to different minorities around the country, some in law enforcement. And I can tell you, even at that level, there are some people that are so brainwashed still to this day that they think that this is some sort of anomaly. They don't want to hear it or don't want to see it. They have a huge cognitive dissonance blindness that has set in, and it's creating pain for them. It's creating shame, and they just can't admit that they were tricked or that they were conned into taking the shot. They pick their position, and they will do anything and say anything to defend their position. And what's going on in these communities, especially when it comes to the NFL, is there's a large swath of minorities around the country that have bought into this narrative that blindly believe that this COVID shot is safe and effective and has somehow helped them. And they don't want the minority crowd waking up to the fact of what the vaccine is actually doing, which is harming them and killing them. So they're going to great lengths to protect this narrative that was done in front of 10 million people on the NFL football field. And that's my opinion, but it's not going to do any good. People are slowly waking up. But again, I ran into it in the last week or so, talking to a few where they're making up excuse after excuse after excuse on, you know, it couldn't be, the COVID vaccine is helping so-and-so. And even when they look at reports of people falling over, they just can't accept that they made a decision, a bad decision. What happens is the mind just completely shuts down, especially if you're a vaxxed person and you're walking around. You're just going to be in pain. Cognitive dissonance is going to set in. You're just not going to want to hear any negative news that you made a bad health decision by taking the shot. It's kind of like when a person gets in a car crash and they have amnesia. I had a doctor explain this to me. They blank out the entire episode of the accident. Maybe some of it will come back to them later. Maybe it won't at all. People that have taken the shot are in so much pain. They know what they've done is horrendous, so they want to hold on to the narrative, because it's comforting to them to hold on to the narrative that the jab was good and that they made the right decision. They don't want to delve in or look at any evidence whatsoever that shows them that they made a bad decision, and this is most likely what's going to happen to you next. So they avoid any evidence, you know, looking at any medical reports or video. They won't look at anything. And they're just, again, this is just them protecting a narrative of the COVID-19. They don't want it to get into the minority crowd. Look what's happening to you. And there were millions of people that night watching this thing, and they're just trying to extend their narrative. As far as what Congress is doing is horrific. Congress is looking the other way on all of this. You don't see anybody in Congress coming out and saying, hey, stop the shots. This is obvious. We have Dr. Peter McCullough testifying for Congress over and over again, telling them that all vaccines are bad. This needs to be stopped, giving case after case after case in his testimony, yet we don't really see his testimony on television. But giving his testimony, saying all the cases of all the heart damage, cancer, and all the other things that this vaccine is causing. But yet, Congress isn't really doing anything. You'd think you'd have a whole handful of congressmen screaming to the top of their lungs to stop the shots, but you don't. And my guess on that is they were all given an exemption in the beginning to the shot. I'd like everybody to think about that. I remember you posted that list on all the people that the Biden administration wrote that exemption list for, and Congress and all of their staff was, you know, front line on that list. So yet they just keep going and going and going. Are they all blackmailed? Are they all controlled through money? Who knows what the levers are that is controlling them, but they're just not speaking out on this. And people ought to really give that some deep thought on why Congress is just acting like nothing to see here. Watch your sports, watch your basketball, you know, watch all your other distractions, and they're not doing anything. And you know what? I know for sure that they know exactly what's going on, and they're just looking the other way. And that ought to speak volume and tell the American people exactly what's going on here, sir.
Well, Danny, that's very, very good. Actually, a story that I'll be covering on Need to Know today has Dana Milbeck attacking Ron Johnson, who's been the one member of Congress that's been outspoken about it. And it's just insulting what Dana Milbeck writes, trying to trash Ron Johnson, because he's the exception. Your generalization is impeccable. He calls him Ron Anon Johnson, imagines a huge conspiracy. Listen to what he writes. One thing is clear, after Thursday's first hearing on the new select subcommittee on the weaponization of the federal government, the weaponization panel's weapon of choice will be the blunderbuss. I don't want to be conspiratorial about it, but House Republicans somehow turned room 2141 of the Rayburn House office building, the Judiciary Committee hearing room, into the main ballroom of a QAnon convention. The witnesses, including world-class conspiracy purveyors, Senator Ron Johnson, Republican from Ivermectin, and former Representative Tulsi Gabbard, independent Ukraine bioweapons labs, might as well have been auditioning to guest host Tucker Carlson tonight. It is possible that by random chance, one of the witnesses may have said something that is factually true, but any pellet of accuracy was lost amid all the errant slugs that ricocheted crazily out of their muzzles. They revisited the Russian collusion hoax perpetrated by the fake dossier, Fusion GPS, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. They conjured an engineered Trump impeachment in a coordinated effort to sabotage any public revelation of Hunter Biden's laptop. They alleged maltreatment of January 6 insurrectionists and suggested that embedded federal agent provoked the crowd to attack the Capitol. They went back a decade to revive the debunked charge that a politically motivated Obama administration sicked the IRS on Tea Party groups. And by the way, Danny, to my knowledge, every single one of those claims he's attacking is true. They imagine that the U.S. government funded the creation of the COVID virus, that the World Health Organization has been captured by the Chinese government, and that doctors have been wrongly vilified for treating the virus with hydroxychloroquine and other bogus treatments. They fantasize about a government cover-up of harms caused by coronavirus vaccines. They imagine that ordinary people are being labeled domestic terrorists for asking questions at school board meetings or for flying the Betsy Ross flag. Every one of those, again, is true. Above all, the witnesses testified to their own victimhood. Senator Chuck Grassley recited a long list of Democrat colleagues who were out to get him as part of a triad that also involved partisan journalists and the FBI. Gabbard, who left the Democrat Party for Fox News after a failed presidential campaign, expressed her outrage that Hillary Clinton said mean things about her and that Mitt Romney made baseless accusations of treason. Apparently, the senator from Utah and the 2012 Republican presidential nominee is part of the vast left-wing conspiracy. Ron Anon Johnson testified about a conspiracy so huge it includes most members of the mainstream media, big tech, social media giants, globalist institutions and foundations, Democrat Party operatives and elected officials, all working in concert with corrupt individuals within federal agencies to defeat their political opponents and promote left-wing ideology and government control over our lives. You've caught us red-handed, Senator. In fact, the Weaponization Committee needs only one more thing to complete its work. A scintilla of evidence. That is so despicable. Danny, I'm just stunned by that. Your thoughts?
Well, sir, you know, that reminds me, that was a good passage. That reminds me of it. It mentioned the ivermectin and the hydroxychloroquine. I'd like to remind everybody that in the beginning, you know, the hospitals were passing out hydroxychloroquine. And then, you know, when it started helping people, you know, they simply pulled it mysteriously. It was just gone, and they stopped issuing it to patients. You know, I have several medical contacts that work at major metro hospitals, and when asked about that, of course, I was told that it was politics. No other reason that they pulled it, and they were told they weren't allowed to give it anymore. You know, I'd like to also point out, sir, that there's a lot more going on. You know, I have a relative in another state that actually passed out in his own home. He actually, and I think it's important to tell this story, he passed out, he was feeling a little bit weak, and he's probably in his late 40s, early 50s, somewhere in there. We're not really close, but he finally did call me, and he said he passed out and had to be rushed to the hospital, 911. He was in the hospital in the ICU for a few weeks and in the hospital for about a month. and he had to have multiple procedures. And it turns out now he has a congestive heart failure and some other issues with his heart when he was completely healthy and normal. He had no issues. And he called me because he's fearing that he's at the end of his life. He's at home now on a lot of medication. He gets tired when he walks up and down the hallway. It's hard for him to do anything. And congestive heart failure is very nasty. You know, your heart doesn't make the oxygen it needs. And of course, you just get tired all the time. It's a condition that, you know, many senior citizens will get, you know, in their older age. Well, he's got it in his younger age. And he told me ultimately that he knew what was going on. And I told him, how could you have fallen for this? I warned you. I mean, I sent you the evidence of the doctors screaming, don't do this. And it turns out that he was involved in his church and succumbed to some peer pressure at his church with his position that he was holding, that he told me specifically that he wanted people at his church to feel comfortable being around him. So he succumbed to the pressure and got the shot. Well, now it's actually destroyed his life. There's really nothing they can do. He knows what happened at this point, and he's really having a hard time. And it was devastating talking to him on the phone. And then there's another example where even in my own family, where I have a couple of other people that I warned early on, I mean, back in 2020, do not get the shot. I sent him multiple doctor testimonies saying why not to get it. Just incredible amount of evidence. And of course, there was major pushback because they watch television all the time and watch TV news. So anyway, I got the old, well, if that were the case, even though they know, you know, that I'm an educated person, they know about my background. And I explained to them, would I be wasting my time telling you this, or would I have better things to do? You know, of course they know me and they know my background. So they were taken back by that. But, you know, I simply got a pushback from one of the seniors that said, you know, Danny, if this were the case on what you're saying to me, we would see this on television. Surely Tucker Carlson or somebody on CNN or MSNBC or whatever network would come out and be telling us that this were the case. So, and I said, did you look at the evidence? You know, the answer was all, no, we just watch on television again. If we would be warned on the mainstream media, if that was the attitude that they took. Well, now both of them are sick and they're having health issues. And I noticed that they don't speak to me anymore. They don't want to talk to me. And what has happened is I've noticed that cognitive dissonance, this is very important for people to understand this, it has many facets to it, and there's also a big case of shame and embarrassment that come out of it. It's a mental condition. People ought to look it up online. There's many doctors on YouTube and different places explaining the power of cognitive dissonance and how it causes, you know, mental blindness in people to where they can't make any decisions and they shut down. And I'd like to say that, you know, these family members don't talk to me anymore out of sheer embarrassment, because they were warned hardcore with evidence. And what I mean by evidence, that's documents, photos, video, and eyewitness testimony from medical professionals, okay? Not just like an article or story. So they were given the whole shebang, okay, in a warning. And I said, just wait a year. Just wait a year and a half. Let's see what happens. You can always get it later on. They would not listen. Well, now they're in serious trouble. And they don't speak to me because they're embarrassed. They're ashamed because they were warned. They were warned heavily. And now they're sick. And now they don't even want to talk because they're too embarrassed on the decision that they made. And I have a feeling that that is happening all around the country, sir. This is just one more example.
Oh, Danny, I think you got it exactly right. It's one of the reasons I'm hoping that Donald Trump is going to repudiate his past endorsement of the vax. It would make a huge difference, in my opinion, to the public, to the nation, if he were to come out and say, acknowledge he was played, that this is very bad for you, and the last thing you want to do is to take the jab. If he were to denounce it, I think that would have a huge beneficial effect for the nation and actually be a reason why people would just flock to support him for 2024. I think it's the one major obstacle standing in his path that he needs to come clean. I mean, the American people are very forgiving. And there's great redemptive power here, potentially, and I hope he will do that. And if I ever have the opportunity, I would encourage him to take that step, because I believe it would be by far the single thing, best step he could take to benefit the nation. Meanwhile, Danny, I wanted to bring you on, especially because of the additional false flags taking place. Here we have one at on a campus at Michigan State late Monday. Let me give you the background and then we'll talk about it. Police said the gunman was a 43-year-old man who was not affiliated with the university. Five victims are in critical condition. Three were killed, and then he killed himself. Here's a report from the Associated Press. A gunman who opened fire at Michigan State University killed three and wounded five, setting off an hour-long manhunt as frightened students hid in classroom and cars. The shooter eventually killed himself, police announced early Tuesday. Officials do not know why the 43-year-old man, whose name was not immediately released, targeted the campus. He was not a student or employee and had no affiliation with the university, according to campus police. Let me just say as an aside, it's just incredible to me, having spent 35 years on campuses, that someone would just wander into a campus and start shooting people. It's ludicrous on its face. The shooting began Monday night in an academic building and later moved to the nearby Student Union, a popular gathering spot for students to eat or study. As hundreds of officers scoured the East Lansing campus, about 90 miles northwest of Detroit, students hid where they could. 4 hours after the first shots were reported, police announced the man's death. This has truly been a nightmare we're living tonight, said Chris Rosman, interim deputy chief on the campus police department. Here's an MSU tweet update. All five victims at Sparrow Hospital are in critical condition. The suspect is a 43-year-old male and is not affiliated in any way with MSU. Roy Kinkle, 22, was attending class in an engineering building when he became aware of the shooting from a university email. Kinkle and about 13 others turned off the lights and acted like there was a shooter right outside the door. Nothing came out of anyone's mouth for over 4 hours, he said. I wasn't ready to accept this is really going on next door, Kinkle said. This is supposed to be a place where I'm coming, learning, and bettering myself, and instead, students are getting hurt. The shooting at Michigan State is the latest in what's become a deadly new year in the U.S. Dozens have died in mass shootings so far in 2023, most notably in California, where 11 people were killed as they welcomed the Lunar New Year at a dance hall popular with older Asian Americans. In 2022, there are more than 600 mass shootings in the U.S. in which at least four people were killed or wounded, according to the Gun Violence Archive. This is a uniquely American problem, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer lamented. Roseman of the campus police said two people were killed at Berkeley Hall and another killed at the MSU Union, while five were in critical condition at Sparrow Hospital. Police eventually confronted the shooter, who died by a self-inflicted gunshot wound, Roseman said. We have no idea why he came to campus to do this tonight. It's part of our ongoing investigation, the deputy chief said. Ted Zimbo said he was walking to his residence hall when he encountered a woman with a ton of blood on her. She told me, someone came in our classroom and started shooting, Zimbo told the AP. Her hands were completely covered in blood. It was on her pants and her shoes. She said, it's my friend's blood. Zimbo said the woman left to find a friend's car while he returned to his SUV and threw a blanket over himself to hide for 3 hours. During the manhunt, WDIV-TV meteorologist Kim Adams, whose daughter attends Michigan State, told viewers that students were worn down by the hours-long saga. They've been hiding all the lights off in a dark room. Adian Kelly, a junior, lives a half mile east of campus, said he locked his doors and covered his windows just in case. Sirens were constant, and a helicopter hovered overhead. It's all very frightening, Kelly said. And then I have all these people texting me wondering if I'm okay, which is overwhelming. Now, here's Here's a report about it, a video report. Check this out.
Spartan friends, Spartan family, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Locked On Spartans. Goes without saying, this isn't going to be a normal episode. We're not going to talk sports at all. We will get to it when we feel fit to get to it, but point blank, you already know the news. Michigan State hit with tragedy, active shooter on campus. This is what we know. We're going to start with facts as we are recording right now, a little before midnight on Monday. Three Spartans confirmed dead, at least five at Sparrow Hospital right now. A shooting took place over two buildings on campus. There is a 48-hour cancellation of events on campus. Yes, that includes Wednesday's basketball game against Minnesota. You talk about irrelevant, but that's just the news that we're going to spread along. And then the suspect was reported at the 11 p.m. press conference by the police. It's a black male. He's short, red shoes, but, of course, could change outfits at any time. And as far as we know, again, while we're recording a little before midnight, still on the loose. So if you're on campus, please stay in shelter. This isn't just me talking. This is the MSU police that's talking. If you have loved ones at Michigan State, probably not a good idea to go get them, as tempting as that is. Again, this is all just information from the police because, well, they're just doing a great job with this whole thing. And we're going to get to that in a little bit. But right now, we're going to start talking with the victims, of course, talking about them. And, of course, the ones in the hospital, the loved ones, the family, and those that are now deceased because of this, the three victims. And
Danny, there's more to it, but honestly, I find this totally implausible right from scratch. And that story, look, number one, how do they happen to know? They don't even know who this shooter is, but they know his age is 43? Give me a break. That's ridiculous. And the story about this student who comes all covered with blood, that sounds totally phony, totally fake. I want to get your take, Danny, because you are truly the expert in this area. But right off the bat, it looks to me like it's a fraud. We'll be right back, Danny. Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, what I'd like to talk about, I guess we'll just go right into the, the Michigan situation.
Yes.
So, of course, I think it's a complete farce. There's a bunch of holes in this, so I'm going to try and start from the beginning.
Go ahead.
What I saw right away is they said it was a 43-year-old black male. Okay, so, of course, I was kind of suspicious at that. There's no weapon. So we're not getting any details at all, and we're not getting, you know, no story, no details on what, exactly how it happened, no motive, none of that. We're not getting anything, but yet we're getting these eyewitness accounts of this sensationalism, like, oh, there was blood here, and it was terrible. You know, the kid we just saw, you played the video, he said, well, let me state what we know to be fact. Well, he's full of it. That kid needs to stay in school and learn what really fact is versus a narrative that he's reading from the mainstream media. When he said, I'm going to restate the fact, it's not fact. All he's doing is regurgitating the talking points from the local media. There's nothing he had to say means nothing. You know, couldn't be farther from the truth. And it was complete propaganda that he was spewing about this whole thing, and some sensationalism thrown in there as well. But a 43-year-old black male. Then they announced there were three victims, okay? So, of course, with the names, they put out the names. Now, the problem is when you try to do a search and you look up college students, often they're 18 years old or 19 years old, and often they're also from other states. So when I looked at that, those names do exist. Okay, I want to say they do exist. But the problem is there's a lot of them and they're in multiple states. So it's going to take a long time to run down and positively ID those faces with those names. I have not been able to do it. There's only three of them so far. So, you know, and they're purposely not giving the 43-year-old black male's name. And the reason why, sir, is obvious, because there's too many Dr. Fetzers in this world that will run him down and figure out that, one, he's either a convicted felon with a gun who shouldn't have a gun and that was recently released out of prison, right? That's one narrative. Or two, you know, he's a gang member or, you know, whatever he could be. And we just can't see because they're not giving us his name. They're keeping it obscure, but yet giving, you know, they can't give us the names and any details on the shooter, but yet they can give us details on the blood and the shoes and, you know, all these other facts. So it's how convenient. They give out convenient facts that support their story, but they leave out convenient facts that show any evidence to exactly what happened and you know, that we can verify any of this. So I don't believe this story. It happened with the governor there that I don't believe in anything that she does. She's shown to be quite corrupt, and I don't believe in any of it. And the last I would like to say, sir, is on another note. You know, if I back in the day when I was going to college, if something like this would have happened on my campus when I was going to school, it would end really, really badly. We'll leave it at that, for the shooter or the shooters. Really bad. They wouldn't have made it. And I made sure of that. And I was quite prepared. And I won't say whether I was legally prepared. I wasn't. But I was quite capable and quite prepared in case something like that were to ever happen. And there are several college campuses around the United States where they will actually allow the college students to get a firearm concealed carry license to go through the appropriate classes and carry their firearm on them all the time while they're on campus. Okay, there's quite a few of them, actually. We'll go through the list today. And if I had a child or a son or a daughter that was going to school, for one, they'd be trained at firearms. I was trained at 6 years old, by the way. I know that sounds weird, but everybody in my family was trained quite young. And I'll never forget the day when I was 6 years old and my father said, "We're going here. I want you to pay attention and you're going to learn how to shoot today." You know, and I said, "Really, Dad? Real guns?" He said, "Real guns. I want you to pay attention, do what you're told." And I'll never forget that day, as a matter of fact, but I'll save that for another show. But in the meantime, I would encourage anybody that is going to go to college in the United States under the current political climate that we're in, with COVID and all this violent nonsense taking place around the country, that you research and send your kid to college somewhere in a state, and there's several of them, where they can learn how to shoot, get a carry permit, and legally carry their firearm on them 24 hours a day as they participate in school, because you never know what nonsense might happen, could or could not happen. And it'll give you peace of mind and them peace of mind, because at least they will be trained that they can, if they get pinned down, that they can take care of themselves and nothing is going to happen to them. And again, if I had a son or a daughter who was going to school, they would be heavily trained and, you know, they would know how to get to a safe spot in the school if something like that ever did happen. And of course, nothing but bad would happen to the shooter and they'd come out totally unscathed. So anyway, sir, I think this is a false flag. I don't believe any of the details because of the way they give convenient facts, but then are hiding the actual facts that can lead us to figure out what's going on here based on the state and who's behind this, based on the youth, the names, and the story. Sir, I would say this is a false flag, and I don't believe anything that's going on here.
Danny, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's all excellent. Right from the scratch, it didn't sound right to me. So I looked at some recent evidence about gun deaths in the United States. This is from February 3rd of 2022. More Americans died of gun-related injuries in 2020 than any other year on record, according to recently published statistics from the CDC. That included a record number of gun murders as well as near record number of gun suicide. Despite the increase in such fatalities, the rate of gun deaths, a statistic that accounts for the nation's growing population, remains below the level of earlier years. So the rate of gun deaths is dropping. What I found most fascinating about this is that the number who actually died from gun death was much lower than I would have anticipated. And this fact is going to stun everyone. Suicides account for more than half of U.S. gun deaths in 2020. Here's a percentage. 54% by suicide, 43% murder, and then 3% other, which includes gun deaths that were unintentional, involved law enforcement, or had other undetermined circumstances. So more than half of the gun deaths each year are from suicide. In 2020, the most recent year for which complete data is available, 45 5,222 people died from gun-related injuries. 45,222. Now, I'm not having the automobile accident death statistic in front of me, but it's going to be many, many multiples of that. There are going to be all kinds of categories of death that are going to exceed 45,222. And remember, more than half of those, Danny, are from suicide. So, you know, you could round it off and say 25,000, okay, gun deaths that are murders. The latest statistics I have, and I'm sure the number has increased now, is that Americans use guns for defensive purposes to defend themselves against attackers millions of times every year, with an estimate then, and the number no doubt is higher today, saving 200,000 lives every year. Now, 200,000 lives is massively more than 25,000 deaths from guns. I mean, it's eight times more. So if you want to take guns away from the American people, you're going to guarantee an increase in deaths by murder, by assailant, by depriving the American people of the right to defend themselves, which tells me the Democrat Party has their head so far up their ass, you know, they can see their tonsils. I mean, this is insulting, Danny, beyond words. Your thoughts?
Well, sir, that, you know, you opened up quite a can of worms with this subject, and you really, I'm glad you hit on that one topic. Firearms are used millions of times every year to persuade crime. And what I mean by that is there's road rage incidences all over the country where somebody will get out of a car with a baseball bat or something, and then only to find themselves staring at the barrel of a gun by a concealed carry permit holder. And then all of a sudden they decide, you know what, maybe it's not a good idea that I attack this person with my baseball bat because I'm mad because I'm looking down the barrel of a gun and I can see the bullet staring at me. So they think better. And they get back in their car and they go about their business. And that is a successful confrontation with a firearm that happens every day. It happens with the police, happens in the gangbanger world, happens in the inner cities every single day. It happens all over the place. And of course, most of those do not go reported. And they're not going to report those. They're not going to talk about it. You know, they simply don't want people armed because it prevents death. It offers security and safety to people. And, of course, they do not want that whatsoever. So that is quite a hot topic in itself, that what you talked about, you know, the gun deaths. I believe that most of these deaths are being the suicides is amazing, but a lot of these deaths is criminal. And I would encourage anybody to watch the channel. I'm going to go ahead and bring it up because I'm surprised it's still up, but it's actually called Police Activity. Police Activity. It's on YouTube. And all the agencies, the police agencies around the country are uploading their body camera footage and their patrol car footage onto that network. And you, if you watch that and you go back in time and you go through those videos, you're going to see a clear pattern on the criminals. Not only are you going to see a clear pattern on race, but you're going to see a clear pattern on how firearms are used and when they're used. It's very clear. It's not fake video. This is a lot. I have firsthand video, like you were standing there, and you can actually see the criminal behavior and how they act. As a matter of fact, many of the criminals will be shouting at the police, "I'm not going back to jail. I'm not going back to jail." So we call that suicide by cop, where they'd rather be dead than go back to jail.
Yes.
That is a big problem in this country. And unfortunately, officers are put in a position to where they have to shoot the suspect. And of course, we never hear any mention on the mainstream media about the suicide by cops. You know, the other day there was an incident in Southern California with a man in a wheelchair. And his feet were missing, but he could still walk around partially on his legs. And they were saying they were demonizing the police for shooting him. Well, what they left out of the report is that this guy had been robbing people on the street. He was black, and his weapon of choice was a butcher knife. And he had been stabbing people, sneaking up in his wheelchair, stabbing people and holding them up. And just before the police shot him, another fact that the media left out is as he was running from the police down the street, he had just stabbed somebody right in front of them. And when confronted to put the knife down, he's actually, there's a photograph that came out of him holding the knife, getting ready to throw it at the police when they shot him. Now, of course, we see all the Al Sharptons of the world saying deadly force shouldn't have been authorized. They should have come up with some other method, you know, some other kind of BS. Well, this was simply suicide by cop, obviously. This is a hardcore felon that had been let out of prison. I looked at his background. He had multiple felony convictions. And, of course, he was actually injured in the first place by police committing violent felonies in the first place. And that's how he landed in the wheelchair in the first place. Then he was let out of jail to further victimize and demonize the citizens of Southern California before being dispatched for throwing or trying to throw a butcher knife at the police. So I'm so sick and tired of the narrative that this is going on. And there's a few other things, sir, I'd like to throw in that I mentioned before that I think really have merit. I would encourage everybody, wherever you live, to go on what's called a citizen ride-along with your local police or your sheriff's department. And simply what that is a process where you sign up and you go on patrol with them and you see everything that they see. And if you get a good deputy or a good officer, he's going to let you walk up to the car. He's going to give you a few instructions on if he ever sees a gun or anything like that. Okay. And he's going to tell you what to do in case of an emergency. You know, you're going to go through all that stuff. Sometimes they'll even give you a vest to wear, that you can wear a bulletproof vest under your jacket or your shirt or over your jacket or your vest. But I would encourage you to go on that ride along and you can actually hear the radio calls. You're actually going to see the traffic stops. You're going to hear what criminals say and how they act. And you're going to hear what average motorists say and how they act when they're stopped for a simple taillight or whatever. You're going to see people that have warrants for their arrest. Chances are, depending on what city you live in, you're going to see somebody get arrested. You're going to see what the process is of actually taking somebody to jail, what they say in the car. It's going to be a complete eye-opener, and you're going to actually see the race and the majority of the people that are committing the crimes in the area that you live, which is very, very important, and what kind of crimes are happening and in what areas of town they're happening. Okay, so that's very important. The cost for that is free, and it'll change your life if you do that in your local town. And the second thing I would recommend is that everybody get a police scanner. Most police departments are on what's called a digital frequency now, so you need a specific scanner. It is an investment, but I would invest in one. There's a company called Uniden. You can buy it on Amazon. And the unit I would get would be called a Home Patrol 2. Home Patrol 2. It's a little small screen. It's a digital box. You simply put in the zip codes, and it'll pull in all the police, the fire, and everything in your area. You'll know exactly what's going on in your county. You're going to know, they give the description of the suspect. You're going to hear the crime, what kind of crime it is. You're going to hear everything that goes on in your county. And listen on a Friday night and a Saturday night, and you'll know quickly where the problems areas are in your town, in your county, and who the actual criminals are. There is no hiding this. This is right in your face. Who the criminals are, who's creating the crime, and what they're doing.
Danny, that's all great stuff. I live in such a peaceable community, a tiny village, that I wouldn't learn anything by riding around with the cops. They've stopped me a couple of times for, you know, minor traffic, going over the 25 mile an hour. I mean, we have very conservative speed limits in town, and I've been stopped more than once, but, you know, I think it's a great idea. Let me add this and see if you don't agree. The Democrats are going to run these shootings, I think, every single day now. We're going to hear them one day after another after another. They think that's reinforcing their proposition that we got to take guns away from the American people. But in fact, every time there's one of these shootings, the sale of gun goes up. It just goes up and up and up. So I think it's a self-defeating policy, Danny. And when the American people get a handle on the fact that these are staged shootings, that they're fake events, that Democrats are trying to manipulate the American people into surrendering the rights under the Second Amendment, I don't think that's going to go down well. And if we can only get rid of the GD Dominion voting machines, which are changing the way we vote from Republican to Democrat, we may be able to do something about it. But it seems to me, you know, that the situation is completely absurd. No one wanted Joe Biden to be president. Nobody gave a damn about Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. And yet he got more votes than ever recorded in history because, as Stalin observed, it doesn't matter who casts the votes. What matters is who counts them. And using the Dominion machines, they stole the 2020 election and then the 2022 when everyone was sick of Biden. I did extensive review of all the polls. Blacks, Hispanics, white suburban women were going to vote Republican. White suburban women, that's a major base of the Democrat Party. They were all abandoning the Democrats because their policies are so stupid and self-defeating, so destructive of America. And even from exit polling, they voted that way. Hispanics, Catholics, white suburban women voted for Republicans. And they stole 57 seats from the House. James Carville implicitly conceded as much. And two or three or four seats in the Senate. We should have had a lock on this administration, but they had to keep Biden in place to continue to destroy America, Danny. It's outrageous. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, this is a whole show in itself, sir. People are waking up. You know, I talked to a conservative college professor the other day that is finally catching on that these false flags are taking place. He himself had bought a firearm and went out and got some training and got a permit to carry a firearm, which he's never done before in his life, but he kind of did that in his retirement. And we see this over and over again at nauseam. What I'd like to point out is to take a page out of your book, sir, about critical thinking skills. You know, these Democrats are really something else when you think about it, because if a crime happens, say, in Michigan, okay, on a college campus, all right, and you got a guy, say, in Montana or Idaho or Wyoming, and he's got his firearms in his home, locked in his safe, all right, and he uses them to hunt. He also has whatever kind of weapons he chooses to use to defend his home should he need to. Maybe keeps them in his truck when he travels. You know, whatever. How somebody who does something in Michigan, why should somebody in Texas, Wyoming, Montana, or Idaho all of a sudden be expected to give up their guns, have to take them out of their safe, and somehow they can't have them anymore to protect themselves on a daily basis because of something that a felon did that they let out of jail, okay, did in some other state? I don't understand the connection. And hopefully the American people aren't so stupid to fall for this, because every single time, all they do, the Democrats, is they're constantly beating on the law-abiding, tax-paying citizen who doesn't even have a parking ticket. Those are the guns they go after, but yet they never go into the inner cities and go after the criminals that are carrying guns every day like a policeman. And they're using them to do their crimes on a daily basis. There's never any talk of that. There's only going after the law-abiding citizen. We must get the CPA around the corner that makes $100,000 a year. We got to get the guns out of his house that he uses to protect himself. We're not worried about the gangbangers in Oakland, Compton, Baltimore, New York, Los Angeles that are walking around openly shooting people every day. It's fine if they have guns. We just want the law-abiding citizen. I'm so sick of this narrative, sir. It is absolutely absurd, and I hope the American people are seeing through this.
What a joy to have you on, Danny. Every time you come on, you just hit it right out of the park. I just love all of this. And I'm sure you've had any further reflections about the Memphis situation before we have to part today?
Well, sir, the situation is situation is still unchanged. Five officers are still not who they say they are. That complete whole thing we pulled apart frame by frame is a fraud. It was quickly found out, and it's one of those stories that's fading off into the sunset, just like Mushroom Man in Half Moon Bay, the Monterey Park, and this Michigan thing that just happened just now with all these facts that are not really facts. They're just a story that's coming out through the mainstream media. It's just going to fade away, and they're going to keep going, and they're going to keep going after the law-abiding citizen because they want them to be a victim. They don't want anybody to be able to protect their life. They only want, people that contribute to the Democrat Party are allowed to have a firearm permit. They want to have say over who has a right to protect themselves and who does not, whose life is valuable, whose life is not. You know, it's like a driver's license. They say it's a privilege. Well, the Democrats are trying to turn a right, and that's the right to bear arms, into a privilege. And then they get to decide who has the privilege of protecting their life. And they'll look at somebody and say, you know what? You didn't vote the right way. You don't get a permit. Your life isn't worth saving. You don't get a firearm. But then you go across the street to another family that voted Democrat, and they'll say, here's a firearm permit. You can have all the guns you want. You voted the right way. You get a firearm permit. And that is exactly what is going on in these Democrat states all around our nation.
And Danny, worldwide, the more guns that are owned by the citizens, the lower the homicide rate worldwide. Even in Brazil, which had astronomical homicide until they relaxed the gun control, the rate of homicides is going down. And in Canada, where before they had lots of guns, they've taken them away and the homicide rate is going up. It's just ludicrous what's going on. The Democrats are selling us a bill of goods on this and virtually every other subject. They deserve to be banished from government. I mean, not just defeated at the polls, but believe me, if we can't get rid of these electronic voting machines, it ain't going to happen. And they're going to continue to destroy America. Vote must be rendered illegal. Thank you, Barbara. That's a joy here.
Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their